Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, brown cow, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing.
Hey, boy, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton
Jim.
Good morning, Elton Jim.
Elton Jim.
The one, the only, Elton Jim Toronto.
Good morning, and welcome to WGN 720 AM here in Chicago. Jim Toronto with you here, filling in for David Plyer till 5 AM, and I understand that today is David's birthday, and so that's probably why he took off, because he is celebrating his birthday. So happy birthday to David Plyer, and always happy to fill in. In fact, this is getting to be kind of a regular thing here with producer Curtis Koch and Roger Banish. Always enjoy being here. I was just here last Saturday.
Yeah.
Or Sunday morning, I guess you could call it. So, yeah, this is 2 weeks in a row. How you doing, Roger?
You're getting to be a habit with me.
Before the show started, I was in the newsroom chatting with one Roger Banish, and he was mentioning how recently he was doing a podcast or some kind of a broadcast, and he was doing his impersonation of Neil Diamond.
Yeah, that was on the it was on the Matt Bubalo show from last night, Saturday morning, yesterday morning, but John Hansen was filling in, and Michael Heidemann produces the Steve Cochran show, came in, and Michael plays guitar, sings, and does a bunch of stuff around town. We have this once a month, or at least it's been for the last 2 months, a pretend campfire, gather around the campfire, and we sing songs.
Who brought the weenies?
We didn't have weenies, we had a kegger. I went out and picked up a kegger.
I don't know, so far that that lineup sounds like you had at least three weenies there.
Yeah, well, we're not going there. So, so Michael had played a few songs, and then I said, hey, how about a good Neil Diamond song? And we search and search, and they settled on Sweet Caroline.
Well, what I want to do with you, I don't want you to... Because I got news for you.
I got no music behind me, though.
Then we can talk to Curtis here, and Curtis can find you something. We can go online and find some bad karaoke things.
No
one does a better Neil Diamond impersonation than me.
Well, I wasn't trying.
No. It doesn't matter. No. So I'm just saying.
It's not a competition.
Oh, well,
no.
With me, it always is. So.
Challenge.
So we are going to, if we can pull this together somewhere during the show tonight.
Oh, no.
This morning, we will do a Dueling Diamonds.
But I hope that's just the instrumental.
Is this the instrumental, Curtis, or no?
That's just the Neil. Yeah, right.
I can begin to notice. Well, take Neil off. Take Neil off for a second. I want to hear it. I want to hear Roger.
No.
I am a said to no one there. Come on, give me a little Neil.
No.
Come on.
I need music.
I'd just rather be forever in blue jeans, babe.
I couldn't carry a note if you gave me a shopping bag.
Money talks, but it don't laugh and it don't walk. As long as I can hear with me.
That's your Neil Diamond.
I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans, babe. Uh-oh, is this?
This is the...
Okay, here we go.
Wait, which one song
are we
doing?
This is Caroline.
Oh.
Come on, let's go. Wow.
I can't begin to notice.
Curtis, is Neil Diamond? Why didn't you tell me that Neil Diamond came into the studio?
It was a surprise booking.
It's got to be him.
I was trying to
based on this voice I'm hearing.
See, I told you.
It's got to be Neil Diamond, right?
Yeah. You like?
All I'm hearing is a newscast, Roger, at this point. I'm not hearing you doing any Neil Diamond.
Well, I did. I started to do it. You were talking over me.
Warm.
Touching
warm. Reaching out. Touching me. Touching you. Sweet Caroline. The good times never seem so good. I am inclined.
You're rushing it. Don't rush it.
Because I want
rush it.
Ooh, to believe I've never would. Okay, no, we're gonna do a Dueling Diamonds later.
Well, you gotta pick a pick
yeah, we gotta
right
do
song.
Yeah, we gotta get like they come into America.
Well, that's just a lot of
they come
talking.
Into America.
I had edited that song, by the way.
Hello again, hello. I just called to let you know.
Welcome to the Neil Diamond Show on WGN Radio.
I think about you every night, and I know it's late, but I couldn't wait. Hello. Yeah. How's that, Roger?
I think that's pretty good. You win.
Do you remember from the old Saturday Night Lives when they, Peter Boyle, who used to be the father on Everybody Loves Raymond,
right.
And John Belushi did Dueling Brandos instead of Dueling Banjos.
Oh.
Remember, you know, the song.
So long
the
ago.
The song from Deliverance.
Yeah, right.
And they did Dueling Banjos. So they went da-da-dun-dun-dun. And he went, you know, Charlie, you know. They were doing stuff from on the waterfront.
Yeah.
It was great.
Could have been a contender.
You were my brother. So we're going to do Dueling Diamonds sometime during the show.
All right. Well, you pick the. You pick the songs, I pull up the lyrics so that I actually know what the heck. Because I can't compete. You know them all by heart.
I do.
I am just an aficionado.
I'm a diamond.
You are an expert.
I'm a diamond head, if you will.
No, you will.
For all you fans of Oahu and Honolulu,
yeah.
some people have maybe even climbed on Diamond Head.
I'm sure.
And some people here have, too.
Wow, it's only 23 minutes into this show.
Oh, man.
Not even that.
Could you imagine what's going to be happening at 4 a.m.? Wow. Stay tuned. I don't know. The transmitter may be turned off.
Yeah, I think someone's on their way out there right now.
So we're going to have some fun tonight between 2 and 5. We always do with Roger and Curtis. Jim Toronto, Elton Jim, filling in for David Plyer this morning. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with whatever this is. Will be more of it right after this. No switching.
Loving him. When Sue came along.
How about this one, Roger?
I like it. I like everything Neil Diamond.
Can you do this one?
No. Not without the lyrics.
No?
Yeah.
I don't know. Come on.
Feel I can find
there
it.
You go.
Find it.
Laying one, save games behind me.
Cause I'll be what I am. A solitary man.
Go with your. You're setting your own pace. If you're going to do Diamond, you got to do Diamond. Not, you know, Elton Jim doing Diamond.
Elton Jim Diamond.
Wow, what?
And you know what? A little interesting tidbit for you with Neil Diamond. Neil Diamond, when Elton John made his debut in America at the Troubadour Club in West Hollywood on August 25th, 1970. Not that I know the date.
Funny, you just picked that out of the hat.
Neil Diamond introduced him.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Very cool.
From London, England, Elton John. At the time, Neil Diamond in 1970 was the guy. And you know, sadly, as his career went on, he got a little, you know, hokey, and he started wearing the sequined vests and sort of became a middle-of-the-road kind of, you know, performer. But in the 70s, Neil Diamond was as cool as it was.
Well, I've had the, when I started in college, in 70, one of my favorite albums was, Hot Summer Night.
Hot August
Night.
Hot August Night.
The double album.
Double album, a live album. Definitely.
It was fantastic.
And remember the cover on that?
Yeah.
He had like a fringe jacket that was all, I mean, he was a madman. He was crazy.
Yeah.
As I said, later on in his career, his edges got a little softened.
And they started to go a little commercial, you know. He does a song about E.T.
Yeah.
And does some other
Turn
stuff.
On your hot light.
Yeah, he got a little too commercial for a
In
while
the
there.
In the middle of a young boy's dream. Gonna take a flight across the moon. You and me. Turn on your hot light now.
That's like I said, that's a little commercial.
Well, I think that really started, though. Well, he lost his edge. Two things happened to Neil Diamond where he lost his edge, no pun intended. His sharpness, if you will.
Okay.
Neil Diamond got a little blunted.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do with a diamond when it's not sharp anymore? What do you call that? It's lost its edge.
Yeah.
Its sharpness, yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think two things happened.
Dull diamond.
Two things happened.
Okay.
He made he actually did this duet with Barbra Streisand.
You don't bring me flowers.
You hardly talk to me anymore. Mm-hmm. When I walk through the door at the end of the day. But see, so that sort of, smoothed him out. And then the biggest part of his career, I believe, was in 1980, where he did a huge flop. Now, the album,
Jazz
the soundtrack, was very good. It had America on it. It had Hello Again on it. It had some very, Love on the Rocks.
Right.
Ain't no big surprise. Pour me a drink and I'll tell you some lies. But the film, The Jazz Singer, completely flopped. It was a remake of the classic Al Jolson film, and it was supposedly going to be, because of Neil Diamond's amazing popularity in the 70s, they figured this is going to be a huge, huge hit, and it wound up being a huge flop. And it really, while the album, the soundtrack album was successful, and did, as I said, was responsible for many of his bigger hits, but the film flopped, and that really hurt his image quite a bit. And he seemed to have lost the coolness that he had. Nobody was cooler in the late 60s. I mean, Neil Diamond came from the Brill Building in the 1960s, where they used to
High school
write songs.
Barbara,
write songs for others, and don't forget he wrote I'm a Believer for the Monkees.
That's right.
And A Little Bit Me, A Little Bit You. Mm-hmm. That's also a Neil Diamond song. And, of course, he had his own. I played Solitary Man. He had You'll Be a Woman Soon.
Mm-hmm.
Red, Red Wine.
Right.
Cracklin' Rosie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my gosh, some of his songs from the late 60s.
Shiloh.
Oh. I mean, there were just some amazing, amazing songs. Mm-hmm. So you got to like Neil, even though, as I said, and now, sadly, he retired from performing. I don't know if it was
his voice.
Was it Parkinson's he's had or something?
I thought it was his voice, but it might have been something else.
I think he's got some kind of a disease. I don't know if it's Parkinson's or not. It might be, but sad to hear that, because he's one of the legends, certainly, of the 20th century. There's no question about that.
Parkinson's, you're right. Yeah,
yeah.
He retired from touring.
Yeah.
This was back January, just over a year ago.
It's been a while. I never got a chance to see him live. That's, in fact,
there is on, because I saw this about 2 months ago, I think. It was either on PBS.
Yes, yeah, where he did
that show.
He did a Hot Summer Night or Hot August Night Part 3 or something.
Well,
and he did it from the Greek Theater.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
I've seen that. It's very
good.
Okay, all
right.
Yeah, it's very
good. Well, how old is that one, then?
That's only a couple years. That was like a couple years before he decided to
retire?
To retire,
okay.
Yeah, that was very recent.
And, yeah.
Sadly, and something we're going to talk about after the news with Roger in the Pop Culture Club, we're going to have Michaela on. And one of the topics I want to talk about this morning, with the recent arrival in late June of the Rolling Stones, they started their tour here in Soldiers Field a couple of weeks ago. Soldier Field, sorry. Over by Soldiers. By Soldiers Field over,
over
there.
Over by Dare.
Over by Soldiers.
Over by Dare.
And I didn't see those two shows in Chicago. And it got me thinking about, many of the baby boomer classic rock acts that are on still on the road now, and there are still quite a few because there's still an audience and they're able to, fill stadiums.
A lot of them, with rare exceptions, like the Stones and the Who, but a lot of them are teaming up with other.
Well, right. But my point is they're still out there. And I guess the reality sandwich hit me when Tom Petty just passed away a couple of years ago at the age of 66. I was always been a Tom Petty fan. I hadn't seen him in a while. I was going to go to see that 40th anniversary tour, and I didn't, and I was upset that I missed it. And now, of course, I'll never be able to see him again.
Right.
And so one of the things I want to talk about is, are there any, you know, if there are any kind of baby boomer classic rock, you know, bands or artists out there that are touring, now, if they're still out there, now is the time to see them, because you hate to sound, you know, a little morbid, but within the next 5 to 10 years, many of these people,
75, 80 years old.
Yeah. If they are not retired, they may be permanently retired.
So are you asking if they're, which classic rock band have you not been able to see or not seen that you really want to see before you can't?
And the idea is, if you haven't, get out there and do it.
Right.
Don't wait, because you might not get that chance.
Yeah.
Because they're all getting to this age now. We're seeing that many of these rock stars are passing away in their late 60s, early 70s. So there's clearly an expiration date on the rock and roll lifestyle, and it's about 67 to 75.
Yeah,
and so,
it's getting there.
Yeah, so that's going to be one of the topics we'll talk about. I'm going to take a quick break here. We'll be back with Roger in the news and a whole lot more. Jim Tirano filling in for David Plyer here at 720 WGN in Chicago. No switching.
There's a time for love and laughter. The days will pass like summer storms.
Jim Tirano with you here at 720 a.m. WGN in Chicago. Filling in for David Plyer this morning. In the background, you hear Charlene Darling and the Darling family from the Andy Griffith Show. Of course, the Darling family, at least the
Hoo-Hi Boys. The boys are not happy.
The group was called the Dillards, which were one of the preeminent bluegrass bands, and still are, historically, in the world. And for them to have been on the Andy Griffith Show, Andy Griffith was a huge proponent of folk music, and found many opportunities to play himself, or to, you know, to play the music himself, or to bring the Dillards on, and to introduce mainstream America to the bluegrass music sound. And I bring this up because today, what I did in the afternoon, I drove out to Frankfort, Illinois, to the Frankfort Bluegrass Festival. And I had a great time out there. I have a friend that was performing there named John Jorgensen. And, in fact, he plays tomorrow at around 12:15 at one of the stages. They have two stages there in Frankfort, downtown Frankfort. The entire town is just enveloped and shrouded in bluegrass music, great sounds from some great bands. It's free, which is amazing. There are food tents, and there's some great music going on in Frankfort this weekend, the Frankfort Bluegrass Festival. So check that out. And as I said, a friend of mine, John Jorgensen, who just finished a stint in Europe playing on Elton John's tour as the guitarist for the last 2 months. Talk about a culture shock. From May until July, he was playing with Elton John throughout Europe, playing 20,000-seaters, played the Montreux Jazz Festival, you know, amazing, staying in five-star hotels, flying on private jets to Nice and back to all the different places. And this week, he drove a van to Frankfort, Illinois. Wow. And carried his own bags and his own equipment and set it up himself. That's the life of a working musician. He is a multi-talented musician, talented guy, Grammy Award winner, John Jorgensen, and played some good music out at the Frankfort Bluegrass Festival, which is going on tomorrow as well, all day, I think from 10 a.m. to about 6 or 7 in the evening. And if you're out there earlier, check out John Jorgensen at about 12:15. Right now, it's time to hit that little button there, Curtis. Ah. When you hear that music, it can only mean one thing. Elton Jim takes a stroll over to the Pop Culture Club to talk some pop culture topics that are swirling around the zeitgeist as well as in my own head. And to help me with the Pop Culture Club this week, as usual, is one of our gold ticket members, our honorary emeritus members. I think his membership card says 002 on it. That's how much of a founding member of the pop culture he is. Mick Kaler, how you doing, Mixter?
I'm doing great, buddy. How about yourself?
Good. Doesn't your membership card have 002 on it?
It certainly does.
Yeah.
But it's a platinum card.
Ah, nice. Yes. Oh, did I give you one of those?
Wow. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Earned that.
I thought they were gold.
Real quickly on that bluegrass talk that you were mentioning, ironically, yesterday was the 57th birthday of one of the greatest bluegrass singers and mandolin players, Rhonda Vincent.
Oh, really? I'm not very knowledgeable on the bluegrass music world. I certainly know Bill Monroe,
right,
who was the father of that. And really, like many others, I got a crash course and started to get into it from the film, what, about 10 or so years ago, the George Clooney film, A Brother, Wherefore Art Thou?
Yeah.
And that Bill Monroe music was featured in that, and the entire soundtrack was bluegrass music. And didn't T-Bone Burnett win an Academy Award?
Yeah, he did for producing the music for that. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So that's bluegrass has certainly gone up in its awareness in the mainstream. But as I said before this segment started, Andy Griffith on his show played a major role in introducing folk and bluegrass music to mainstream America on his show, featuring the Dillards, who were one of the, if not the, preeminent bluegrass bands of the day.
Yeah. In fact, on the Andy Griffith show, I always loved how Andy got so nervous around Charlene Darlin all the time.
Well, he was so pretty.
Yeah.
You couldn't keep your eyes off her, could you?
You guys have been fixing eyeballs on each other since the day you met.
Briscoe Darling.
That's right. And of course, Briscoe had the hots for Aunt B.
Yeah, remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Taters! They were sitting at the table, and Aunt B was cooking for the Darling family, and they were eating food just as soon as the platters were brought out. They were eating everything, and Briscoe grabs the plate, and the potatoes go around the table. They get to him, and the platter's empty, and he goes, "Taters!" And then Opie sees what's going on, and the platter of meat comes by him, and the platter's empty, and so Opie goes, "Meat!"
Sure.
And Andy goes, "I would rather that the boy doesn't yell at the table."
"Well, that's a good idea. You shouldn't have him do that."
But it was so funny. I went to this bluegrass festival this afternoon, and about an hour before, I was watching an Andy Griffith marathon, and sure enough, there was an episode with the Darlings.
Yeah, there you go.
And they were playing that song when Charlene sings, "There is a time for love and laughter."
That's the one that made Briscoe cry,
yeah,
too.
"Well, that one always makes me. Well, then I'll just hold it in." So strap on and get ready. And Briscoe used to play the jug.
Yeah, that's right. He'd blow the jug while all the other boys were picking with the guitars and banjos.
In fact, what was really interesting, which I did not know, one of the guys in this band that I was talking about today, a friend of mine, John Jorgensen, has a bluegrass band. He's got several different bands. He plays gypsy jazz and rock, and he's got a bluegrass band that played today in Frankfurt. One of the members is a guy named Herb Peterson, who was a member of the Desert Rose Band, which was a country band with Chris Hillman and John Jorgensen back in the late 80s. Herb Peterson was in the Dillards in the late 60s.
No kidding.
I did not know that he was a member of the Dillards. Now, he was not on when they were on the Andy Griffith show. That was in the mid-60s. But he joined later the band, and he was in the Dillards.
Wow.
Yeah, very cool. So I want to talk a couple of things with you today on our pop culture list. So you tell me what you'd like to talk about first. The one thing I was mentioning to Roger here was that, when the Stones came to town a few weeks ago, it just dawned on me, wow. I mean, Mick Jagger is, 75? He just had a heart valve replaced. And Ringo just turned 79 a few weeks ago. Paul McCartney is 77. I think Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey are both 74, 75, getting around there. Elton John is 72, going on 73 in March. I think Billy Joel either just turned or will be turning 70. Eric Clapton is certainly in his 70s. So many of these classic rockers are now at a point where they are well, you know, past the expiration date. And while they're still out there, you know, it's getting close to the end, either physically, where they can't perform anymore, or mortally, where it's just, you know, it's time to catch, you know, to check out. And so if you are thinking of seeing some of these bands, and thankfully many of them are still on tour right now.
Yeah.
You might not want to wait much longer. If you've always wanted to see a band or you hadn't seen a band in a long time that you want to see from that era, you might want to stop procrastinating.
Well, it's a great idea because, you know, there's the old saying, tomorrow is promised to nobody, and these guys are running out of tomorrows.
Yeah, and it really hit me about a year and a half or 2 years ago. I'm not sure exactly. Has it been 2 years since Tom Petty passed away now?
Yeah, it'll be 2 years this October.
Yeah, and, you know, I've been a Tom Petty fan from almost the beginning. Even, you know, I remember, you know, hearing American Girl and Breakdown, and then certainly in 79 when Damn the Torpedoes came out. My gosh, I mean, what that album is still, there's not a bad song on that album. That is just a powerhouse album, and still is. You know, still holds up after, you know, almost 40 years now. And I hadn't seen him in a long time. I've seen him perform maybe two or three times, but I hadn't seen him in a while. And he had been touring quite a bit, and I didn't see this last tour. It was the 40th anniversary tour, and I was going to go, and I'm not sure why I didn't. And then, sure enough, right after the tour, literally, I mean, within days.
Right, after he played the Hollywood Bowl, yeah.
Yeah, he passed away, and it really was kind of a wake-up call, a reminder to say, you know, if there are those bands that I still haven't seen or that I haven't seen in a long time and either should or want to see one more time, you know, The Who is out on tour. They started their tour here in Chicago. They're still touring. We still have two Beatles out there. Paul McCartney's touring. Ringo Starr will be at Ravinia next month, at the beginning of the month, I think the 3rd and the 4th. So you got a chance to see a Beatle. The Rolling Stones have toured. They're still on tour if you wanted to go to another city. I think The Who comes back close to here in September playing Alpine Valley. So there's a chance to see them there. Eric Clapton has had some hand problems and some nerve damage, but I think he's been maybe trying to get back on tour. Elton John obviously is doing his farewell tour. Billy Joel has been touring for many years, but they're out there. But if you've been waiting, you know, you might want to you might not want to just let that go because they might not be there either physically or. You know, they might just be gone. They might not, their talents might not be gone, but they might be gone.
Right, exactly.
Is there someone that you...
Back to Petty for a minute, the most weird thing about Petty's passing was that tour, that 40th anniversary tour, that was his biggest, most successful, most attended, and critically acclaimed tour he's ever done. So it was almost like, live-wise, he had peaked right then. And then right after that, like you said, he's gone. It's
yeah.
Like, oh, well, I can't see him now.
And apparently, I mean, he was so, you know, they set that tour up. It was the 40th anniversary. And he was told by doctors not to tour because he had a bad hip. I don't know if it was a fractured hip. And sadly, so he was taking some, you know, major medication to get him through that tour to withstand the pain. And sadly, once the tour was over, he must have really over-medicated himself. He couldn't be totally medicated, you know, during the tour because he needed to be coherent and he needed to be able to perform. But it seems like, sadly, once he got home, he must have been in some real major pain and just went overboard. And sadly, you know, he passed away.
Yeah.
Is there anybody that you're that is sort of on your list of your favorite acts from that era that you haven't seen that you would like to see, or have you seen everybody you've wanted to see?
Well, the one that I haven't, believe it or not, after all these years of going to concerts and shows, and you're right, I should see him, is McCartney. I have never seen Paul McCartney
really?
Live.
You've never seen Paul? Paul, no, Paul never, is live.
I've had opportunities, and it's always been that, oh, well, I can catch him next time around because he tours quite often. It's not like, you know, remember back to the 70s where some of these bands would tour for a year, and then you wouldn't see them for 3 years.
Right.
And it's like now these guys, to make their money, they have to perpetually be on the road. So if I'm smart, I got to get out there and go see Paul McCartney because I have never seen him live.
Yeah, no, I mean, he definitely, now I've seen him probably about 3 or 4 times. The last time I saw was maybe 4 or 5 years ago at Wrigley Field. He put on a great show. There's no question. He's still out there performing. He has a lot of energy. I think I've heard him perform a few times. Seeing him, you know, on television perform. I think the voice is beginning to crack a little, but you can't fault it. These guys are 77 years old. I mean, Ringo just turned 79.
Right.
You know, and Springsteen now is going to be turning 70. He's planning on, in September, and he's planning on a tour sometime in 2020. So, you know, most of those classic rock people now are not even in their 60s anymore. First you see, like, well, they're in their 60s. No, now they're in their 70s.
Three digits, three syllables.
Yeah. 70. You know, so, yeah, I mean, it's time. I'm just looking at the list, and I've seen almost, I would say I've seen everybody that you should see. I mean, I've seen Pink Floyd. I've seen Eric Clapton. I've seen, you know, the Stones. I've seen Bob Seger. I've seen The Who. I've seen McCartney and Ringo and Billy Joel and Bob Dylan and Elton and Springsteen. I mean, I don't know. I mean, but at the same time, there are a few that I say, well, I would like to see them maybe one last time.
Mm-hmm, yeah, catch one more show before they're done, right?
Yeah, but, you know, like I said, if you haven't, you might not want to wait because... boy, when I saw the news that you know, Mick Jagger, who still weighs 110 pounds soaking wet, that he had a heart valve problem, then anybody could go.
Well, the funny thing about Jagger's heart surgery, he didn't even know he had a problem, but all these guys have to undergo physicals, you know, to be covered by insurance before they go on tour. And they have pretty extensive physicals. It was during this physical, and there must have been some kind of scan that they did, that they discovered Jagger's problem. It wasn't like he went to the hospital and said, hey, you know, my ticker's hurting. They found something out that he didn't even know about.
Oh, wow.
So he could have just dropped before then.
Wow, I didn't even know that. Oh, could you imagine?
Yeah. And the other thing I noticed about the Stones tour this year is on their itinerary, there's about a 3 to 4 day lag between every show.
Right.
And I think it's actually twofold. First of all, you've seen what they had at Soldier Field. They've got a massive stage set up, so it takes a lot to go from one town to another and set that up. But I am positive the other part of it is these guys need some downtime.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, it's amazing. And I saw some of the clips from the concert. As I said, I didn't see the concert themselves, but you know, he was still moving around and shimmying and you know, doing his chicken walk and the whole thing there, and doing his you know, his punches in the air. I mean, he was still doing the stuff, but you know, there's no question. Now, the irony is when you know, people say, well, geez, do you want to see them now because they're older and you know, their skills may be diminished, and you know, is it worth, even if I haven't seen them, is it worth going now because they're so old? But my argument to that is, and it's, and I think it, there's some validity to it, and it's very ironic, is even though they're in their 70s, I would argue that many of them are performing better than they did in their heyday 30 or 40 years ago. Yes, there's no question the energy may be, you know, diminished because they're older, but in terms of the musicianship, of the performance, don't forget 30 or 40 years ago, most of the time they were either stoned out of their minds or drunk out of their minds during a show.
Right, or they've been partying all night and they weren't, I wouldn't say not taking it as seriously, but they weren't as focused as they are when they're older.
Yeah.
And they're being more careful about what they're doing.
So yes, the shows them may have had more energy and been more rebellious and maybe had more of a rock, you know, spirit and attitude to them. But if you're talking about pure performance and pure musicianship, I would argue, I mean, I've seen Elton John perform many times. I've seen Billy Joel perform many times the last few years. I've seen McCartney. You know, I've seen The Who. And I would argue that in terms of the performance and the musicianship, it's better than it was during the 70s, because now they're clean, they're sober, and they are taking pride in their ability to perform and play their instruments, as opposed to back then, where they were just coming on stage and going rock and roll.
Right, being a little bit more reckless than
yeah.
they are now.
So the shows that you will see, if you're being hesitant to say, well, geez, they're 70 years old, they're not going to be as good as they were, I would argue that that might not be true. They actually may be better now than they were 40 years ago, because now they're clean and sober, and they are more attuned to putting on a very good show as opposed to just being a rock star. And there is a difference.
Yep.
Well, on that note, we'll take a quick break here. Jim Toronto talking to Mick Kaler in the Pop Culture Club. After the news, when we come back, Mick, you just started to watch Stranger Things.
I am 3 hours late to the prom, but I am on it.
Well, I got news for you. I'm just as slow to the prom as you are. So we're going to talk about, after the news here in the Pop Culture Club, what's it like living in a Stranger Things world when you're not watching Stranger Things? Is it possible with everybody going so crazy about that show? So that's just one of the topics we'll talk about after the news here. But right now we'll take a quick break. Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer here at 720 WGN. no switching? That really happens. That could be only the sound of one thing. It's the theme of the Pop Culture Club segment, and we've got Mick Kaler on with us today. Hello, Mick.
I am stunned that you even allow Jamie to put fans on.
No, I mean, I gotta have the fan. Oh, I mean, I die without the fan. No, I did actually. I mean, it was not easy, but I said, okay, put the, you know, it's 92 upstairs. Put the air on. Go ahead.
Let's put it this way. It sounds like the immigrants down in Texas and other places, they have better living conditions than you and Jamie have right
now. All I have to do is get a cage for her.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, it's just like we were illegals, okay?
Well, I'm trying to feel their pain.
That's right. You're trying to empathize.
Yeah, I'm so sympathetic to the cause that I want. Until all the immigrants are free and uncaged, I will not turn my air on.
There you go. You don't even use toothbrushes or anything like that. You're doing the whole thing.
Yeah, but but yeah, no, I hate this weather, and I just and now our summers are starting later and also ending later, and now September used to be the official end of summer, but it's in the 80s and 90s now into late September.
Right, we're almost at the peak right then. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm happy that it's already the middle of July, but I don't think we're halfway there yet, because usually it would be the beginning of September. You could say, yeah, it's the middle of July, we're almost done with this. But my gosh, this whole week, coming week, is supposed to be in the upper 90s. Not me. I like 75 and 55. 75 during the day, 55 at night.
Got it.
And we're not having that at all.
No, not for a while.
No, not at all. So Mick Kaler is joining us here this morning in the Pop Culture Club. Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer. Be here till 5 a.m. And what I wanted to talk about, first of all, you should mention Mick. You can hear his work on a regular basis on the WGN Morning News. He and a partner in crime are parody songwriters, and anything, and they play his music and his songs frequently on the WGN Morning News, the number one rated WGN Morning News. Anything recent or new on the docket there?
Well, we have something in the works that we'll hopefully send to the morning show probably Monday regarding the famed gator in Humboldt Park.
Oh, dear. Well, Mick, you know,
you got to jump on that.
I guess so.
Gator has its own Twitter handle.
I mean, there comes a point where, you know, I've been on the radio over the last week or so while this whole thing has been developing, and I have purposely not talked about that, but I guess, you know, if you're going to do a parody song, that is ripe for parody, right? I mean,
yeah,
that is. And when December comes, we're all going to hear it when we do the year in review. Everybody's going to talk about, remember when the alligator was in the you know, the Humboldt Park Lagoon. Now, Roger Badish talked about this earlier when I was in the newsroom with him before the show. We were talking about the alligator. I asked him, did they catch it yet? And he had a really good hypothesis on this. You know, there is an alligator film.
Crawl, yeah.
Crawl coming out. And does it take place in Chicago?
No, it's down in Florida.
Oh, okay.
But it just opened on Friday.
So,
and I actually mentioned that on Twitter. I'm like, is this a coincidence?
Yeah.
A conspiracy?
So is this a really good guerrilla marketing campaign?
Right, kind of a direct thing, yeah.
Because we're talking about alligators and crocodiles, and that movie just comes out, and it's, you know, it's a four-footer, so it's not like it's a majorly dangerous thing, but it has certainly captured the you know, the media attention and the public's desire to see this thing and everything. And so I don't know, coincidence or not, I think that's a really good idea, because how the heck does that thing get into that lagoon? And it's funny how it's at the Humboldt Park, you know, it's in the Logan Square, the hipster area now, you know what I mean?
Sure.
It wasn't in the Calsag River or something.
The only way it would have been better is if it would have been at River North, right?
Well, now I hear that I hear Wicker Park is getting very jealous, and they want their own alligator, and so does Lincoln Square.
Sure.
Yeah, all the hipster areas. So so look for an alligator now at the Gap, or at Peace. You know, the pizza place that Rick Nielsen owns in Wicker Park.
Right.
I think there was an alligator sighting there the other night. At the hipster in Wicker Park. But so you're going to have a what song are you taking off for the alligator?
Well, what do you
song?
Think we're going to use? We're going to use Crocodile Rock.
Oh,
we're just changing up the
look at you.
Sure.
Look at you.
I know. right in your wheelhouse there, buddy.
Oh my gosh. So you know there's nothing that you won't bastardize just for to get on the bandwagon.
Sure.
Yeah, I'd love to find out what this is going to. And are we getting tired of Crocodile Bob? I am.
Yeah, I know.
Or Alligator Bob
too. You know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's brought in as this big, you know, expert, and you know, 2 weeks later, hey, Bob.
He's still paddling around the canoe.
I mean, I could be Alligator Jim. Right now, Alligator Bob and Alligator Jim have the same results at catching an alligator.
Same success rate.
I haven't been out on a boat. I haven't been near that lagoon. And my success rate in catching an alligator has been the same as Alligator Bob's.
I even saw that Benny the Bull was site.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, now it's going to become like that. Now it's going to become a marketing thing.
You know the only one that's missing in Chicago to be at the lagoon? You got to have Ronnie Woo Woo there.
Oh, alligator, woo! Alligator, woo! Alligator, woo! Alligator, woo!
Yeah.
So what I wanted to talk about before, in fact, you know, we were talking about how you and I both came to the party late on Stranger Things. Now season 3 just dropped on July 4th, and both of us, in fact, I binged season 1 for the first time on 4th of July,
okay.
And you are even, when did you start watching Stranger Things?
About 2 days ago.
You're worse than me.
You're right. You keep hearing this buzz about, you know, certain shows. Now, I don't have Netflix, okay? And so I went to my Xfinity, you know, the on-screen TV guide, and I just dialed in Stranger Things and learned that I can have a month of free Netflix as long as I dump out by August 10th. I don't get I have to pay the monthly fee, and I can have a trial month of Netflix because I don't have Netflix. I have Xfinity cable. So I was like, well, why don't I do this and I can watch Stranger Things? So I'm in.
Yeah, well, I've had Netflix now for about a year and a half or so. And certainly when I got it, that was one of the first things. I made a list of all the shows that I wanted to watch, you know, on the streaming. I've also got Amazon Prime. And so I wrote a list of all these things. And certainly because of all the popularity and the buzz and, oh, my gosh, you know, this show is so great.
You've got to, it's different.
Yeah, you know, and in fact, this, you know, and the 80s nostalgia, and of course, whenever I think of the 80s, I think of this song. How could we forget the great film Valley Girl?
Sure.
Remember Valley Girl?
Oh, yeah, that was a big deal.
And this soundtrack was so 80s, and the song by Modern English was the key song in Valley Girl and really helped to propel the new wave to the middle, to the mainstream.
Exactly.
A lot of places and MTV were playing this kind of music, but it really wasn't getting on commercial mainstream stations until MTV in the mid to late 80s, and this song by Modern English certainly helped. And yes, all you heard about was all the great nostalgia of the 80s, in Stranger Things and the pop culture references. So on 4th of July, even though season 3 was just being available and dropping on Netflix, I decided with my wife, we said, well, let's watch season 1.
Okay, so you started from the beginning.
Yeah, so we started at season 1. Now, you started at season 3.
Right, I have, and I'll go back to seasons 1 and 2, but
well,
I've been hearing
start
so much about it. It's like, well, why don't I just pick up where the dance is going on right now?
Yeah,
that's what I've been watching.
Yeah, but see, that's, you have access to season 1, right?
Yeah, and 2, right.
So why didn't you start at the beginning? Why did you start in the middle?
Because I'll get to them eventually. It's no big deal.
Yeah, but do you know anything?
I know a little bit about their past just because of the little things I've read and little excerpts and stuff like that. And I don't think so far it's been that hard to pick up on what's going on.
Really? Oh, okay, because I just thought it would be by season 3 that you'd have to have a pretty good handle on what's happened beforehand to understand what's happening. But you're saying that you've been able to follow it?
Yeah, I really had no problem, and it's been really fun so far. In fact, I've actually got only 2 more episodes, and I'm done with season 3, and then I'll just run back and go to 1 and 2 and go from there.
See, now what's so funny is that I've only seen season 1, so we should actually get together and fill in the blanks for each other.
Right.
You can
converge like that. And, the thing I was going to mention about Stranger Things, and this is even if I had Netflix, much like you, Jim, I'm always, kind of hesitant to jump into something that everybody jumps into.
Right.
And says, oh, this is the greatest thing in the world. I mean, I have HBO. I never watched Game of Thrones. And I also never watched on cable. I never watched The Walking Dead. Well, I watched maybe like one episode
of The Walking Dead. I still don't watch
The
Walking Dead.
People live and die for.
Yeah.
And I was like, not for me. I know what I'm missing. With Stranger Things, I did not know what I was missing, and I like what I see.
Yeah, I still don't watch. I'm not a big zombie fan at all, so I don't watch Walking Dead. But I came to the party late on Game of Thrones. It wasn't until the actual first season was completed that I actually watched it, and I came way late to the game on Breaking Bad. I didn't watch Breaking Bad until about the 3rd or 4th season, and
the same way with that. And I'll be honest, I was the same way with Mad Men and Sopranos.
Oh no, I was from the get go on both of those. Yeah,
I just kind of pulled back, and I'm like, I don't know. And then you hear enough where you're like, you're missing this great party, you're missing all this fun. And it's like, well, maybe I better go back and start watching these things.
Well, the only thing about Stranger Things, so my question was, so did you, for the last 2 years, did you feel out of the, out of the hip party because you weren't watching it? Or did you,
Sure, yeah, I did. Because I'd hear people, buzzing about it and on Facebook, ooh, the new season's out, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, I can't join in on this because I don't know what's going on.
Now, the only thing that I would say is I enjoyed season 1, and I've heard through the grapevine that season 2 was a little disappointment. So I'm going to definitely watch 2 and 3, there's no question. But I really did like season 1. So I am kind of mad that I didn't jump onto it when I could have. But I really don't. What's interesting is I understand why people went crazy for it, because it is very intriguing, and there's some interesting characters and subplots. I get all that, and yes, the nostalgia of the 80s, blah blah blah. But at the same time, my gosh, when I was watching it, I said, "Wow, this is a very derivative show."
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh. I mean, there is Stand By Me. There is The Goonies.
Yep.
There is E.T.
Yep.
There is
the same ones I got on my list of that I'm seeing too.
Yeah, Firestarter. The Stephen King. There's also, this one goes way back. If people ever have seen it or know about it, there's a great Twilight Zone episode where a girl gets lost in a little girl gets lost in a second dimension through her bedroom wall.
Okay, and you could also even dovetail that into Poltergeist too.
And Poltergeist, yeah. So I mean, while I think it's a good show, there's no question that, my gosh, I mean, one scene, they were literally the kids were literally walking on a train track. And yeah. I was waiting for them to go, lollipop, lollipop, ooh, lolly, lollipop, lollipop.
And dodging the train, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know. Well, what?
It's funny you mention that because, you know, I've seen a different set of seasons than you have, and there's more than that as far as things that you're going to see. You're going to see Terminator.
Oh, really?
Okay, you're going to see Terminator 2.
Oh, wow.
And then the one that you're leaving out that actually goes before the 80s is Jaws.
Okay? Oh, right.
Look at the Chief. Yeah. He is driving the exact same truck that Chief Brody
how funny.
Did in Jaws.
Yeah, and he has that outfit Chief on. Police.
And he has the same uniform, and if you look at his patch on his uniform shirt, it looks just like Chief Brody's, except it says a different town than
funny.
Amity. So there's that derivative, too.
Nice catch.
Yeah, well, it's funny, because I'm watching it from a different perspective, and I think you are, too, where you're hearing about all these little references and songs and styles and, like I said, all these movies that have been mentioned, and I've been consciously looking for these as I'm watching the show. It's like, oh, there's Terminator right there.
Yeah.
You know, oh, there's Goonies, there's E.T.
Well, Mick, I want to thank you for staying up late with us, or staying up early, whatever it is, and I will watch season 2 and 3, and you watch season 1, and then we will compare notes.
We can do that. No problem, buddy. I'll be there.
Very good. Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. Have a great, have a good morning, I guess.
You too, pal.
Okay, take care. Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer this morning. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back after this. No switching. Oh, wouldn't it be nice if we had a nice Beach Boys song? To live together when we are the world where we belong. Get much better.
Not
that's too high.
Let's
too high.
That's what. Okay.
I can't wait to see what Mike Love is going to sound like with Ringo Starr at Ravinia. Like, how high is he going to be able to? Is he just? Do they have guys like backstage hitting all the high notes that he's just
probably?
Yeah, come on.
Yeah,
I mean, the guy's 75. He can't.
By
be
the way,
those notes.
I saw on I think it was on Twitter a report out of L.A. And you were just talking about this with Mick that Paul McCartney. Finishing up his tour in L.A.
Yeah, what about it?
And guess who walks out on stage?
Who?
Ringo.
Ringo!
And plays a couple songs with him. Isn't that cool?
You know, I wish, and I don't know why they can't do this. You know, there's two Beatles left.
Right.
We are running out of time, as I said. You don't want to be morbid, but there is a reality. There is a finite end to this, and these guys are getting older, and as we've seen. You know, John Lennon, 40 years old, you know, assassinated. George Harrison, 57, passed away. But here's, you know, Paul, I believe, is 77. Ringo, just a few weeks ago, turned 79. I know they have very successful solo careers and they even have very successful solo tours. But wouldn't it, speaking of Wouldn't It Be Nice, the song that Curtis chose as a bump here, wouldn't it be nice for just one last hurrah?
Yeah,
that you have, and you don't have to label it as the Beatles. It's not a Beatles reunion, so you don't have to get into that. The Beatles reunion stopped in 1980 when John Lennon was killed. That was the end of the Beatles reunion. But wouldn't it be great to just be able to see McCartney, Ringo,
right?
You know,
I'll even go you one better. And I've thought of this for years. Believe it or not, I have.
Okay.
So you've got Paul. You got Ringo.
Right. I know where you're going, I think.
Yeah. You bring in Donnie.
You bring in Donnie Harrison.
Right. And you bring in Julian.
Julian or Sean.
Or either one.
Right.
Right.
And, yeah.
I would say Julian, he's the older of the two.
Right. Yeah. But they're both musicians. They both.
I understand.
Yeah.
But doesn't he share his father's birthday?
Yes. No, Sean does.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Sean does. All right. Sean does. Yeah, not Julian. Sean does.
But like I said, either one.
Yeah.
I think that would be the concert of the ages.
Yeah, but even if you didn't
seriously.
Want, yeah, no, and I agree with you. It'd be great to have the four people and their, you know, being represented in some way on a stage together. There's
right.
no question that would make
right.
it would be a great tableau. It's a great picture, and it would be historic. But even at the very least, if they don't want to go for that, if they feel it might be gimmicky or whatever,
mm-hmm.
at the very least, can't Ringo and Paul just do a joint tour? Play the Beatles songs while, you know, at the end of the day,
mm-hmm.
that Paul McCartney voice, as much as there are some great Beatles tribute bands out there.
Right.
At the end of the day,
yeah.
Paul's voice is Paul's voice. And when
right.
Paul's voice is gone, it will be gone. And
yeah.
Ringo's playing is very, you know, individualized.
Right.
And so I think one last time, you know, they're getting to the point now where, come on, just do a joint tour or just do, you know, do a residency at Radio City Music Hall for a week or something. But to just have those two on instead of this casual, like you're just saying, oh, you know, a couple of songs kind of thing. And a few lucky people get to see that just by accident, you know.
Well, but then you all right, so you don't do a massive tour. How about if you do, like you just mentioned, a residency at like the largest amphitheater on each continent?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't do a pay-per-view because people want to be there.
Right, exactly.
So you do a residency, say a week of shows at, I don't know, whatever the biggest field is.
Yeah, like at Wembley, a stadium holds 90,000 in
all right,
England.
You do that for a week.
Right.
Then you do it, Budokan in Japan.
Right.
Whatever the biggest one is here in North America.
Right. No.
I know they have huge stadiums in South America. You do like a week, take a week off, two
right.
weeks off, whatever, you
yeah.
rest up, and you're done in 6 months.
Yeah. I think they are such a cultural icon. There's no question about it. They have transcended the decades.
Yeah.
They've transcended the century. And we have two left. And they actually get along very well. It's not like there's any animosity
right.
there. And
well, he wouldn't have played
right.
with McCartney if
I'm
there
just
was.
Saying,
he
know, and
gone
so
there.
I think they should take the stage together one last tour.
Yeah.
Let people see them. The majority of people alive today have not seen them together as a band.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. So
I think the last time that I know of.
1966? I mean,
in terms of the
Beatles playing.
No. The Concert for George.
Right. But, yeah, well, they played together. Yeah.
Right.
No, but I'm saying the far as the Beatles, the four Beatles, the last
oh, right.
time they played together was, that was 50
right.
years ago.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. They stopped touring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyway. It's about 3:50 here in the morning at WGN 720 AM. Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer. We'll take a quick break and be back after this. Hey, no switching.
Penny Lane, there is a barber showing photographs of every head he's had the pleasure to know.
Jim Toronto with you this morning at WGN 720 AM. Filling in for David Plyer. Be here for another hour or so. We were just talking about, wouldn't it be nice if, given their ages, that Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr would actually tour together. They have been touring individually for many years. Ringo actually will be coming to our area next month in August, I think August 3rd and 4th, at Ravinia with his all-star band. And I've seen that show a few times. It's very entertaining. He always brings a very talented group with him of individual all-stars who play some of their own hits. And then Ringo, of course, plays all of his Beatles as well as solo hits. And I got news for you. You know, Ringo is always kind of like his John, Paul, George, and Ringo. But Ringo, in the 70s, at the beginning of the 70s, was the most successful solo Beatle artist. He had more top 10 and number one hits than the other three Beatles. So figure that out. And he's got some great songs, if you think about it. Photograph, It Don't Come Easy, Back Off Boogaloo, No Song. He had some major hits, no question about that. But at this point in their lives and in their careers, Paul was 77, Ringo just turned 79. Wouldn't it be great if they just did a co-headlining tour? Don't put the name Beatles on it. It's not the Beatles. It can't be the Beatles. But how great would it be to see an entire show, not just one or two songs that, you know, out by chance Ringo walks on one time in some place and some lucky group of people get to see that. But wouldn't it be great to actually have a co-headlining tour, McCartney, you know, Paul, Ringo, tonight in your town for 2.5 hours playing all those Beatle hits as well as their individual hits as well. Oh, I think they are so popular and they are so iconic at this point. And as I said, they have transcended the decades as well as the different generations. You've got people in their teens as well as in their 80s who are Beatles fans. I just think it would be great to be able to see them on stage together for an official tour, not just once so every so often one of these guys, you know, coming on and doing a couple songs with one another. Maybe they'll be moved to do that. I'm glad that you chose Curtis, my producer tonight, Penny Lane. I've been to Liverpool and I've been to Penny Lane, the area there, and it is so cool because many of the sites that Paul McCartney mentions in that song are still there.
That's awesome.
The barber shop is still there. And the bank is still there, and it's all there.
It's got to have such a unique atmosphere.
Oh, it is.
Just walking around there, knowing the history behind the song and the band and everything.
Yeah, and it's so. And the thing is, the area is so small. It's just this little. It's a roundabout, like it says in the middle of the roundabout, and that's exactly what it is. It's just a small little round circle area where the traffic kind of, you know, goes around, and you basically walk in a little circle around it, and there are some of those sites that Paul McCartney still, you know, that he referenced in the song that are still there. If you're a Beatles fan, I have to tell you, you have to go to Liverpool because, so much of their history, in their music as well as their lives is still there. It's there on the streets. I went on a personalized tour with the gentleman who was related to Pete Best, the original drummer, and he took us on a individualized tour, and he took us to the cemetery, and sure enough, there is a headstone with a woman named Eleanor Rigby. Paul McCartney makes it sound like he came up with that name. Oh, come on, give me a break. This is way too coincidental that in a Liverpool cemetery, there would be a name of Eleanor Rigby, and he just thought that up. I don't know why he's being mysterioso about that, but we saw Eleanor Rigby's tombstone and so much more. So you went to John and Paul and all of their, you can go outside of their houses and even inside some of their old homes. So if you ever get a chance, or if you are a real Beatles fan, I would say, you know, save it up. And make sure you get to Liverpool because it's really an amazing experience. Jim Toronto filling in for David Plyer this morning. Be here for another hour or so. What do we got? A little break here, Curtis? Okay, we'll do that. And as usual, folks, I'll be back. But while I'm away, no switching. Jim Toronto with you here this morning at WGN 720 AM. Elton Jim. Be here another hour. So that was Kate Bush's version of Rocket Man. And I play that song, not just because, of course, the natural connection of an Elton Jim and an Elton John song. But this week, next Saturday, in fact, July 20th, will be the 50th anniversary of the amazing accomplishment of human beings. And regardless of what country and who did it and what sex they were, regardless of all that peripheral things, at the end of the day, landing on the moon was an amazing accomplishment by human beings. And 50 years ago, on Saturday, we will be celebrating when Neil Armstrong stepped foot on the moon, the first time that man had gone out off of his planet, out of his atmosphere, and onto another heavenly body. And I don't know if we really have fully appreciated and grasped that fact, even 50 years later. I don't know if we have. And I'm glad that I've got Curtis here, the producer, Curtis Koch, who's with me tonight, because he's a younger guy. You're in your 20s, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so I want to just find out from you, since it's been many years since I've been in the educational system, if things have changed. Because here's my view on this. Over the last couple of last week or so, there was a program on PBS Channel 11 here in Chicago under their American Experience umbrella called Chasing the Moon. It's a 3-part series. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, they'll replay it sometime this week. Check your listings, and if you see it, DVR it and try to get all 3 episodes. It's called Chasing the Moon. And hopefully, they, as I said, they will play it sometime this week leading up to the 50th anniversary on Saturday. Because I watched it last week, and I've always been saying, and I learned even so much more, and whatever my opinion on this only just got stronger by watching this. But I have always felt that as a country, we have never fully honored and appreciated all the astronauts who have gone into space, not just on the moon, but into space. Even the ones that are going now, they go in there on the space station all the time.
Yeah.
And we don't even act like that's a big deal. Do we realize?
It's become a part of like just a normal everyday. Yeah. Yeah.
And do you realize what is happening? That is unreal. Would people in biblical times or in ancient Rome have ever been able to conceive the fact that we would leave this planet? They thought this planet was flat. Would they have ever conceived that we would have the ability and the knowledge and, more importantly, the drive and the ambition and the commitment to leave this planet and go to another planet, or not a planet, but a heavenly body or whatever you want to call the moon there? Why don't we know, like we know the names of all the Kardashians and all of their cousins and all of their stepbrothers and sisters? We know that. We know all the names of Angelina Jolie's adopted kids.
I don't know that.
Well, I'm just throwing that out.
Yeah, I get it.
But my point is, can you name, Curtis, 10 astronauts?
Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, of course, those two big guys. I think Guyon Buford Jr., I think that's one of them.
Okay.
I know he was one of the first African
Americans. Okay, I'm not trying to put you on. I'm not trying to put you on the spot here. My point is the fact that you're struggling, and I'm not pimping you. I'm trying to prove a point, and I couldn't do it either. And this is my point. Why we as a country, or we as a world, even the Russian astronauts, you know who Yuri Gagarin is?
Yeah.
Okay, first man in space.
Yeah.
Was a Russian. But we should know these people's names like we know Thomas Jefferson and George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and Thomas Edison and anyone else like that who have these people that have gone on and done amazing things. These people, the bravery, the commitment, the intelligence. These guys are all major, intelligent engineers as well as skilled pilots.
And I mean, chemists. The fuel,
yeah.
All
yeah
that
I mean,
yeah.
These guys, when you see these astronauts, they're very low key and they're not flashy. And so you get a sense like, well, you know, okay. But physically, they were specimens. Perfect specimens, they had to be, but intellectually superior people, and then they were basically sitting on top of an atom bomb and not really knowing if they were going to even leave the launch pad. And sadly, 3 astronauts never did leave the launch pad, including Gus Grissom, who was one of the leading astronauts in the early space. A fire happened while they were on the launch pad, and they died in the capsule. Okay? That's bravery. That talk about giving the ultimate sacrifice. And I am amazed how in our educational system, we are not taught and given the information about these people individually and collectively for what they have accomplished, not just for our country, but for the world. I remain baffled by that. And then I watch this show on PBS called Chasing the Moon. Once again, look it up, DVR it. It might be on in the middle of the night, so, you know, record it if you have to. I learn things about the space program and some of these people that I never heard before. Why is that? Now, Curtis, you were just in grammar school, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
did you learn in grammar school, did you learn anything about our space program?
We learned a little bit, like, kind of the basics, like, oh, yeah, these guys went to the moon, you know, and here's how it started. And we watched a little bit of, like, video clips. It wasn't really until high school. Where that was
okay. So then, in high school, what did you learn?
In high school, it was more so of the full blown process of how, you know, this is how the space race kind of formed,
right,
in like history classes and stuff, and then it kind of evolved into here were the points of going into space and that sort of thing. And of course, being the high school that I went to, they showed the opposite side of people proving that the whole land
was fake.
Right. Yeah, or whatever you choose to believe. There's that sort of thing,
right,
too. But, I mean, nonetheless, they still gave it to you on both sides of here's why people say, yes, they did land on the moon, and here's what
but
they
did. But my point is,
there.
Did you get the same kind of a class? And maybe, and if you did, great. I know I didn't. But did you get a comprehensive, you know, retelling of this where you really feel that you have a full grasp of what it was all about and what happened? Was it more cursory?
It was a little bit more cursory, but there were details in there that made it feel like you got a little bit more.
Okay, well, that's good then.
Then
maybe it's getting better. All I know is that I was probably, what, 4 or 5 when the when they landed. So I have memories of it. I believe I do. I don't know if I think I have memories, because then a couple years later they were still talking about it and I saw it then. So I don't know. I do know, God bless my mom, she was such a pack rat and she saved a lot of things she didn't need to hoard on. But she did save. I still have the newspapers from the moon landing days, because this was such an amazing accomplishment at that time that, you know, she kept these saying, you know, this is important. And so thankfully I still have those things. But I just, when I was watching this Chasing the Moon, I learned, for instance, I never heard, did you ever hear of the name Wernher von Braun?
No.
Okay. We should all know this guy's name. I didn't know it either. This guy, ironically, a former Nazi, was the head of our space program, the biggest proponent, and basically it was the driving force for getting us into space and on the moon. Wernher von Braun. Never knew that name. This guy's role was incomparable in getting the space program up and selling it to the American people. In the 60s, it cost $40 billion in the 60s. Could you imagine what that would have been in dollars today?
That's insane.
50 years ago, it cost. So there was, and believe me, and they show news clips in this. You know, the space program has always been controversial, and there have been a lot of people, and you can't argue with the argument. And at the time, people made the argument saying, wait a minute, if we can spend $40 billion going to the moon, why can't we spend $40 billion on giving people on Earth opportunity and education and jobs and taking them out of poverty? Why are we spending $40 billion to go to the moon when we're not taking care of our people here? And that's still kind of an argument. And it's a valid point. But at the same time, you also have to weigh the cost of the ability to gain knowledge and to push forward and to push as a society and as a species to push those boundaries. And so thankfully back then, even though the price tag was a crazy amount, thankfully the lawmakers and the Congress at that time were willing to fund this program, obviously, spurned on by John Kennedy, who made the, infamous and famous both pledge that we will get a man on the moon by the end of this decade. And sure enough, by 1969, he said that in 1961. And in 1969, we did get a man on the moon. And it's unbelievable that we did, given the knowledge and the technology and the capabilities that we had at that time. That was an audacious boast to make. But that's what we're talking about, aspiration and drive and ambition and commitment and devotion to something bigger than us and to do the impossible. I hope we still have that in ourselves, but this was an amazing accomplishment, and I hope this week that more people will come to appreciate this. I was this what I said, Werner, the ironic thing is Werner von Braun was the head of the United States space program. Or maybe not the official head, but certainly one of the main players. Nazis were also heading up the Russian. The irony of this great situation here was that both the American space program and the Russian space program were headed up by former Nazis.
That's insane to think
it's
about.
It's unbelievable when you think about that. But this goes to show you how far ahead of the curve Adolf Hitler was. When you talk about World War II, beating Hitler, this was a major threat to the history of our civilization. If you saw what he was doing with the Holocaust and concentration camps in eliminating people that he didn't like, could you imagine if he would have had a nuclear weapon? Because that's where it was going. These guys were developing missiles. Atomic missiles. That's where their background was. And when the war was over, because of their wealth of knowledge, the United States and Russia brought them over to help us. Because that's how far ahead Hitler's Germany was. So that's an interesting little factoid of this. But when you think about the astronauts, a great film to see is The Right Stuff. If you've never seen that film.
I was just actually going to ask you, because I know just came out this year, Apollo 11.
Right.
One of the movies that came out.
And there was the movie about Neil Armstrong called Spaceman.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
With Ryan Gosling.
So I kind of going off of what you were saying earlier about kind of people remembering it, I think there is a little bit of value to it, especially when you see entertainment coming out these days. That you're seeing more and more people kind of turning that respect.
Well, hopefully. I do hope. There was another show that I have to bring up because this is crazy, and I was not aware of this at all. In the mid-50s, before even John Kennedy made this boast as president to get to the moon, there was a project called Man High. They wanted to, this in the infancy of the space program, it was still under the auspices of the Air Force. They wanted to see how high a man can go physically, body-wise, up into the atmosphere, into the stratosphere. How far could we go until our body starts to break down? Will we go unconscious or we get delirious? And what would we need to offset those things if we were to go into space? Two or three guys went up in a helium balloon 100,000 feet. In a small little cone with mylar on it and some, and obviously some, oxygen and things like that. But they went up in a helium balloon, 100,000 feet. Now don't forget, planes fly at about 36,000 feet. These guys were in this small little container like a tin can, 100,000 feet up in the air.
Well, then there was the guy, was this maybe 2 or 3 years ago?
Yeah, right.
With Red Bull. He went all the way up and he jumped out.
Well,
and
so this guy, there's this guy, we all should know this guy's name. His name is Joseph Kittinger. He first went up the first time, went to 90,000 feet. Then he saw his oxygen was running out, so he brought it down. Another guy followed him. His name was David Simons. He went to 100,000. Another guy named Clifton McClure went to over 100,000. He came down. His temperature was 108 degrees when he came back to Earth. 108 degrees, and he was fine. Unbelievable. So this Kittinger, who had to abort his mission first, after they saw we can go up to 100,000 feet and we could make these different allowances, he said, well, that's fine, but what happens if we're up there that high and something happens and we have to eject? This Kittinger in 1957 or 58 goes up in the helium balloon 100,000 feet in the air, like you're talking with this guy just did, and jumps out of the of his balloon with a parachute and drops 100,000 feet when they didn't know what the heck was going to happen. I mean, the guy that did it now, at least they had an idea.
Yeah.
This guy didn't know if he was going to die, if he was going to be unconscious, if his head was going to blow off. He didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah.
You talk about courage, and all this was all done for the sake of knowledge. So I urge you all to, you know, we have so much information at our fingertips. Google NASA, Google, you know, the space program in the early 50s. You know, Google Man High, Google Apollo 11, Google astronauts. But I've always been, you know, interested in this, but I learned so much from this three-part series that I'd never learned in school. And my point was, when I was in grammar school and in high school, when I was in grammar school, we were still going to the moon. Why wasn't I learning about this? Why wasn't I hearing about the history of Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong and Michael Collins were the first three on that? Why didn't I know more about John Glenn? Why didn't I know about more about Alan Shepard? Why didn't I know more about Gus Grissom? Why didn't I know about this? Why didn't I learn about this the same way I learned about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln? So, we should not take what we accomplished 50 years ago, and I wish we would have that same kind of ambition moving forward, because we seem to be stuck in a rut here in terms of goals and ambitions. And I know that, you know, Elon Musk and others are trying to get to Mars, but and things like that, but it still doesn't feel as ambitious as an accomplishment to do it for the sake of mankind, as opposed to for the sake of stock price. We need to be a little more bolder. We need to think big, and we need to be more visionary. And the space, our space program was an amazing thing. 50 years ago this week, July 20th, when Neil Armstrong landed, learn as much as you can about this, because I swear to God, if you do look things up and watch this show that I was talking about, Chasing the Moon, you'll definitely learn something, and your eyes will open. Wow. Jim Tirano filling in for David Plyer. We'll be back after this. No switching. That's debatable.
Circuses on the air.
The president doesn't.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Johnny.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I wasn't waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in 6 seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. The Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
And now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
And Elton Jim Toronto. In for David Plyer. In Chicago. Hey, Schwanneroo.
Good morning.
How are you doing, David?
Oh, hanging in. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Been here since 2 o'clock, just having a little fun.
You're in for Dave overnight?
Yeah. Yes, I have. I guess